You know, you cannot be too Jewish.
Thank you. I couldn't possibly agree more.
Shalom, and welcome to the Two Jewish Radio Show with Rabbi Sam Kohan and friends, a weekly serving of everything Jewish. We'll have a great hour together today of news, music, comedy, and conversation. Our guest this morning is Rabbi David Ingber, founder and senior rabbi of Romemu, a dynamic congregation and community in New York that has become a magnet for young, involved Jews. We'll also have a visit from our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Please email your comments to us at 2JewishRadio18@gmail.com or visit us on the web at 2JewishRadio.com. The opinions of the host and guests on 2 Jewish are their own and not those of the radio station. 2 Jewish is paid for by 2 Jewish radio programs and podcasts, Tucson, Arizona. And now, here's Rabbi Sam Kohan and 2 Jewish.
Shalom. When I returned from my wedding and honeymoon trip a couple weeks ago and shared some travel experiences and thoughts about the Jewish communities of Rome and the history of the Jews of Sicily and of Italy more generally, I promised to complete the Judaic travelogue. I would share our Jewish experiences in Greece. We visited Crete, Thessaloniki, and Athens. But then, last week, we had our gala celebration of our 19th anniversary show of 2 Jewish. If you missed that, I highly recommend listening at 2JewishRadio.com or downloading the show on iTunes. And then last week, we also had to talk about the recent death of comedian Jackie Mason, may he rest in peace, who partially inspired our name of 2 Jewish. Today, however, we can go back to Greece. Actually, my bride Sophie and I had such a wonderful time in Greece, I'd be very happy to go back there in person. I think she wants to move to Crete. But since there are no rabbinic jobs in Crete, and I don't speak Greek, and neither does she, our memories will have to serve. While there was a Jewish community on Crete for 2,300 years, from before the Romans conquered Crete, going back to the time of Alexander the Great, more or less, the whole community was destroyed in 1944 in one of the tragic disasters of the Holocaust. The Nazis captured Crete from British and Greek forces in a brutal battle in 1941, and after 3 years of German occupation, as they were beginning to lose control of the Eastern Mediterranean, the Nazis rounded up the 263 Jews who remained in Crete, put them on a ship for Piraeus, the port of Athens, intending to send them to their deaths in the Auschwitz concentration camp. A British submarine misidentified the ship as a Nazi military transport and torpedoed it, killing virtually everyone on board. Sadly, Crete has the dubious distinction of having the highest percentage of its Jewish population destroyed in the Holocaust of any Jewish community in the world. The synagogue in Chania, Crete, the sole remaining one on the island, wasn't open on the days we happened to be there. I can't report much about it. There may remain a few elderly Jews in Crete who were hidden by Christian Greeks from the Germans, but there is no longer much of a Jewish presence on this lovely island. In contrast, the endearing city of Thessaloniki, second largest city of Greece, still an important port and regional capital, has an active Jewish community. Thessaloniki has been a significant city since it was founded and named for the sister of Alexander the Great in the 4th century BCE. The Jewish community here dates back to antiquity. It was to the Jews of the large synagogue in Thessaloniki that, in the late 1st century CE, the Christian Paul wrote the letters that Christians include in the New Testament as Thessalonians 1 and 2. The city was turned into a major capital by Eastern Roman Emperor Galerius in the 4th century, and it has remained an important commercial, political, administrative, and military center for its more than 2,300-year history. Thessaloniki was conquered by the Ottoman Empire in the early 1400s, and when the expulsion of the Jews from Spain took place in 1492, the Ottoman Sultan invited Jews to settle in his domains, and they took him up on it, especially in Thessaloniki. In fact, so many Sephardic Jews came to join the original Romaniote Jewish residents there that in the 1500s, Thessaloniki's population was over 50% Jewish, making it the largest Jewish city in the world in the 16th century and the only one with a majority of Jewish residents. Thessaloniki's Jewish history is remarkable. Includes great scholars, false messiahs, many synagogues, special foods, and wonderful music. Thessaloniki, also known as Salonika, was called the Jerusalem of the Balkans for a long time. While Thessaloniki grew and the Jews were no longer the majority in the diverse, multi-ethnic, and religiously tolerant city over the centuries, the Jewish community remained central to the life of Thessaloniki. There were many synagogues, a marketplace largely populated by Jews, entire Jewish sections of the city, important figures in the leadership of the city as well. That all remained true up until a terrible fire during World War I burned much of the center of Thessaloniki in 1917, including all the Jewish neighborhoods, and, of course, the Holocaust. 48,000 of the city's 54,000 Jews were murdered by the Nazis. Those who returned after the war rebuilt as much as they could, and the functioning synagogue today includes plaques and Torahs from the many destroyed synagogues that flourished in earlier days. Still, there are many Jewish memories on the streets, a good Jewish museum, special Jewish foods, and in a general sense, Thessaloniki preserves memories of the centrality of Jews to its identity. One of the outdoor markets is still owned by a Jewish family. There's a Jewish center and preschool in the same area. It may be a far cry from its heyday as the epicenter of Jewish life in the Eastern Mediterranean, but still, there are Jewish reminders everywhere. And the food, of course, is wonderful. To play us in this morning, here's the song Wait for Me, Salonika, by Israeli singer Yehuda Poliker, who recorded a song his father and other Thessaloniki Jews sang to one another in Nazi concentration camps as they dreamed of returning home.
עוד גבול אחד, עוד נצח זמן, חכי לי סלוניקי. רבה הדרך ליוון, חכי לי סלוניקי. שוטט הלב, קפוא הדם, בשלג של גרמניה. כולם כולם עבדו לי שם, בלאגר בפולניה. חברי פנים, שרידי חיים, פליטי מסע המוות, בלויי טלאים, הנה באים לבכות ברחובותייך. החופש בא, אביב חדש, קרוב אני אלייך, כצל דהוי בגוף חלש, אבוא בשעריך. עוד גבול לך, עוד נצר זמן, חכי לי סלוניקי. רבה הדרך ליוון, חכי לי סלוניקי. עוד גבול אחד, עוד נצר זמן, חכי לי סלוניקי. רבה הדרך ליוון, חכי לי סלוניקי.
That was Yehuda Poliker singing of Thessaloniki. One more border, one more eternity. Wait for me, Thessaloniki. Long is the way to Greece. Wait for me, Thessaloniki. When we return on To Jewish in a moment, our guest, the dynamic Rabbi David Ingber, explains how he came to found one of the most interesting and fastest growing congregations in America, Romamu, in New York City, and just what makes it unique. Find out when we return in a moment here on To Jewish.
We are the soul of Tucson. We are your neighbors and friends. Our commitment to provide the very best relies on the finest products and services you, our community, has to offer. Together, we make Tucson thrive. When we win, you win. Casino del Sol, the soul of Tucson. Enterprise of the Pasquayaki Tribe.
Congregation Beit Simcha, the House of Joy, a newish Jewish synagogue in the northwest of Tucson in the Catalina foothills, celebrates a great array of services, classes, and events this summer and fall. Established by passionate, caring congregants and me, Rabbi Sam Kohan, Beit Simcha has created a vibrant, vital community that strives every day to serve God with joy. A new progressive congregation in northwest Tucson in the foothills, Beit Simcha is open to everyone throughout the metropolitan area, providing weekly Shabbat services, youth and adult education academy courses, social justice opportunities, outreach, and cultural Jewish programming, and High Holy Day services for 5782 coming up beginning of September. Beit Simcha's synagogue is located at 2270 West Ina Road on the north side of Ina, just west of La Cholla, in our own building near the entrance to the Foothills Mall property. Services, classes, and events are open to everyone once again. Join us in person Friday night and Saturday morning. Email me, rabbi at beitsimchatucson.org, BEITSIMCHA Tucson.org, or join us every Friday night on our Facebook page for Shabbat evening celebration services at 6:30 p.m., Saturday Shabbat morning services at 10 a.m., all with me leading them. Torah study precedes those Saturday morning at 9 a.m. Facebook page is Beit Simcha Tucson, BEITSIMCHA Tucson. We will continue to hold our services with full music in person and by virtual experience every week. All of our Adult Education Academy classes are live and on Zoom. You can access those by emailing us, rabbi at beitsimchatucson.org, or going to our website, beitsimchatucson.org. Our wonderful religious school and Torah Tykes programs are available in blended formats as well, some students live, some on Zoom. For more information about Beit Simcha, to attend services, our great religious school and Torah Tykes programs, bar and bat mitzvah, confirmation, high school programs, and rich array of Adult Education Academy courses taught in person and on Zoom, and of course all of our services in person and on Facebook, go to beitsimchatucson.org, BEITSIMCHA Tucson.org, or call 520-276-5675. That's 276-5675, BeitSimchaTucson.org. Join me, Rabbi Sam Kohan, in the newest, fastest-growing, and most exciting Jewish community in southern Arizona in its great beginning years. We are delighted to welcome the two Jewish our guests this morning. Rabbi David Ingber is the founder of Romamu, an extraordinary Jewish community in New York that now is more than 700 households large. He was named by Newsweek one of the top 50 most influential rabbis in the United States. I want to know how they vote on that. And the Forward is one of the 50 most newsworthy and notable Jews in America. His congregation and community include elements of Jewish mysticism not always experienced in mainstream Jewish life, and he has a deep and rich Jewish background himself. Good morning and welcome to Two Jewish.
Thank you. Good morning. Good to be with you.
So tell us why you started Romamu back in 2008.
I was an Orthodox young man, grew up in an Orthodox community, modern Orthodox. So I went to kind of Orthodox day schools here in New York. And when I was 18, I had a year abroad in Israel where I became very, very religious. I went from being a kind of a modern Orthodox kid in Long Island to being an ultra-Orthodox kid in Jerusalem. The ultra-Orthodox stage lasted for about 5 years. And when I emerged from it, I left Judaism almost completely and went on a journey that included becoming a certified yoga instructor, studying philosophy and psychology, and becoming very involved in meditation. And when I came back to Jewish life in my early 30s, after 10 years away, I was introduced to Rabbi Zalman Shachter Shalomi, the founder of the Jewish Renewal Movement, a movement that I had never heard of before, that incorporated, Jewish mysticism and Hasidism and meditation and all other elements of Hasidic life, but without the pre-modern baggage. It was a kind of relevant, post-modern, experience of joy and texts that dealt with spiritual matters and matters of the heart. And so when I met him, he ordained me and I became a rabbi and started the place in New York because I felt that I wanted to build a synagogue that incorporated all those elements in the community that was dedicated to all those values. There are plenty of synagogues in New York. There are many of them that are very beautiful and that I resonate with, but it felt like there was a unique opportunity to build something that I felt was lacking in some ways here in New York City.
The largest Jewish city in the world, of course. So was your first idea, I heard this rumor, I'm not saying where, that your first idea wasn't necessarily to found a synagogue.
No, that's a rumor, but I wanted to create what I called at the time a Jewish life center. Like my contention was that when we talked about Judaism and those who were engaged and those who were not engaged, we often use the term identity, and I felt that identity was an odd term. I thought it would be better to use the term or the category of aliveness, meaning I felt that when people walk into a place that's alive and dynamic and something's happening, they can't help but be connected to it. And so I didn't think that it was, the problem wasn't that people weren't interested in their Jewish identity. The problem was that people were not connecting to a center that was meeting their body, their heart, their mind, and their spirit. And I wanted to create a more holistic expression of a Jewish community center and call it a Jewish life center or a Jewish spiritual center, JSC. And my vision was to create a building that had multiple floors, kind of like the JCC in Manhattan, actually.
Right. 90, and, or the 92nd Street Y or something like that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Right. Those are all the models, but I wanted the operating system because it felt like they had all gotten on board with this notion of needing hardware, needing a building and physical structures that would reflect a holistic approach to life. But I wanted the synagogue to be transformed as well into a place where the body and the heart, the mind, and spirit were all being integrated in a way that connected with their vitality. And the number one goal was to walk out of everything at Ramamu feeling more alive. And it didn't mean more happy necessarily, but more alive, more connected with vitality, more connected with wisdom, more connected with resources that make for human flourishing and human evolution and human achievement and human better able to navigate the world, right? That's the idea. So that was the original plan. I called it the Abia Center, A-B-I-A, because in Kabbalah, as you know, maybe some of your listeners know, that in Jewish mysticism and Kabbalah, there's not one world. There are multiple dimensions or worlds, as they call them, and the names are Atzilut, Briah, Yetzira, Asiyah. There are four names for each of these dimensions, physical, emotional, intellectual, and spiritual. And the first letter of each of those words, it formed an acronym meaning Abiyah, Abiyah, which also is Hebrew for I will express myself. So I wanted it to be like an amazing center for human self-expression.
We'll explore what Ramamu eventually became when we come back with Rabbi David Ingber in just a moment here on Too Jewish. Do you know someone who personally made a major difference for the whole Jewish people? An individual who's done important work for Klal Yisrael and deserves to be highly recognized for that effort. As president of the Kohan Memorial Foundation, I'm grateful that the modest cash awards we started more than 10 years ago have grown into a substantial amount of unrestricted funds given to winners, with the help of donors like many of you. The foundation, named for my grandparents, Rabbi Samuel S. Kohan and Irma Kohan, makes these awards for important service to Klal Yisrael, the entire Jewish people. That service can be in one of four activities: unity, education, creative arts, or rescue. Past Kohan Award recipients are remarkable people who've done outstanding work. If you know someone who qualifies for a Kohan Foundation Award, please go to kohanaward.com, kohanaward.com, and fill out the simple nomination form. That website is kohanaward.com. Nominate an individual or donate yourself. Do it for the whole Jewish people. If you have a question, comment, compliment, or criticism, kvetch or kvel, please email us at toojewishradio18@gmail.com. That's TOOJewishRadio18@gmail.com. Or visit our website, TooJewishRadio.com. You can hear all past and present shows through our website, TOOJewishRadio.com, streaming us from there, downloading us from the Apple iTunes Store as very popular Jewish podcasts. Top 10 in North America, according to Moment Magazine, over 100,000 downloads on Podbean. We welcome our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Rabbi.
We've been talking about the very rich and complicated history of the Jews of Rome, and we got to, the reestablishment of the Roman Jewish community in a larger way, the building of the synagogues under papal jurisdiction, right, and under papal protection.
Right. The city of Rome was completely controlled by the popes until late in the 19th century. And Jews did live in a ghetto until late in the 19th century, but conditions got a little bit gentler. One thing that didn't change...
You know, that was kind of interesting because, you know, Napoleon broke down the walls of the ghetto of Venice when he ended the Venetian Republic and so on. Not so much in Rome?
I'm not sure that Napoleon invaded Rome, actually. I don't know is the answer to that. But one of the things that should be mentioned about these five synagogues that were built around the same square
right.
in the heart of the old ghetto is that by papal decree, they had to be low. They couldn't be high or impressive or as high as a church steeple or whatever.
Right.
So they were inconspicuous buildings, not glorious at all from the outside. And the food developed in the Jewish ghetto, which is still eaten, cherished by Romans today as traditional Roman food, was the food of poverty. It was fried artichokes and fried dried cod, bacalao.
Kind of feel like they must have brought that from Spain somehow, but maybe not.
Maybe from Portugal.
From Portugal, yeah. But Basque stuff.
Those foods are still to be had throughout Rome, but particularly in the old Jewish ghetto. It's interesting that there are absolutely kosher restaurants that like have certificates and all that, and there's separate dairy restaurants and meat restaurants or whatever. There are kosher-style restaurants, like kosher-style delis in L.A. that we're all familiar with, right? And there are restaurants that are completely not kosher, where you can get ham and cheese sandwich, all scattered through the ghetto.
Yeah.
But what people don't know is that today there are other centers of Jewish population in Rome, some of which have their own history that goes way back. Like in Trastevere, across the Tiber River from the ghetto, is where the Jewish community's offices are, and a primary school and a few other major Jewish institutions, because real estate in the ghetto is too expensive and there's too many tourists. And so they formed a new neighborhood. And also in the ancient port of Ostia, which is where the airport is, Fiumicino Airport, this was an ancient port going back to well before the Common Era. It was an old Jewish community. There's a cemetery, and there's even the Jewish version of catacombs, one in Ostia and one in Rome. So there is a lot of Jewish history to see, but the most impressive visually and sort of spiritually in terms of our ultimate triumph over anti-Semites is that when the ghetto walls came down and Rome was governed by secular authorities, Jews were given permission to build a grand synagogue in the ghetto, which is very tall, very monumental, very beautiful. You can only get in there as a member of a guided tour from the Jewish Museum, which is located underneath the synagogue and is a fabulous museum. And the museum underscores one of the most recent, but also most important layers of Jewish Rome, which is the Libyan immigrants who came from Libya, which was an Italian colony. And when the State of Israel was established and Jews fled most Arab countries in the late 40s and early 1950s, most of the Libyan Jews went to Rome, and they salvaged more holy objects than they could use in their new home. So a lot of those holy objects, whether Torah scrolls or the Samin boxes, whatever, all those things, are on display
yeah, that's
in
right.
the Roman Jewish museum, even though they're from Libya, because that's now an important element of the community there.
Fascinating. I will say the Shabbat services I've been to at the Roman synagogue are really fascinating and beautiful, well-led, and there's a group that they come from wherever they live all around Rome for Shabbat there. I'm sure they drive, don't tell anybody. And they, you know, their melodies are unique. They use certain pismonim, certain psalms that are different, that are not typically used in other places. They're very proud of their Romania heritage. It's a very interesting Jewish community. And the artichokes are fantastic. Thanks so much, Tom. We'll talk next week.
I look forward to it.
It's time now for our old Jewish joke of the week. Jewish humor your Bubby and Zadie knew, brought to you by Too Jewish as a public service. A professional schnorrer, a tzedakah collector from a yeshiva in Jerusalem, knocks on the door of a house in New Jersey. The husband comes to the door and gives him $100. Impressed by the generosity, the collector says, "Please tell me your Hebrew name. I'll mention you at the Kotel, the Western Wall." The wife then comes to the door and says, "If you're going to pray for us, take this letter, please. Place it in the Kotel, the Western Wall. We've been married for 15 years. We haven't been blessed with children, and this letter is written from the heart. It begs God to open God's kindness, chesed, to us. Give us a child." The tzedakah collector promises he'll deliver the letter in Jerusalem and goes on his way. 5 years later, he happens to be back in the same neighborhood in New Jersey, knocks on the door of the same house. The wife comes to the door with a herd of children behind her. "What happened?" asks the tzedakah collector. She replies, "It's a miracle. Our prayers were answered. I was blessed with 2 sets of twins, then 2 sets of triplets, 10 children in 5 years. Baruch Hashem, blessed is God," says the tzedakah collector. "So where's your husband?" And the wife answers, "He's in Jerusalem trying to find that letter." That was the old Jewish joke of the week, special feature of Too Jewish, just for you. You should live and be well. And now a word of Torah. This week's portion from Deuteronomy is called Shoftim, Judges. It establishes a process for the administration of justice and includes one of the most powerful statements in all religious, philosophical, or ethical tradition. Tzedek, tzedek tirdof. Justice, justice, you must pursue. In the Torah, which has no extra words, no kefel lashon, a repetition of a word means that it has additional importance and power. Here, the word for justice, tzedek, is repeated, emphasizing that justice is extraordinarily significant. We must be not only fair in life, but truly just. We must find a way to remove our own ego needs in any judging situation and seek not self-justification, but true justice. Sometimes, we must even admit that our processes of justice can result in unjust decisions and unfair punishments. That, too, is part of seeking true justice, of being truly just. But even more than that, the Torah teaches we must not only be just, but tirdof, pursue justice, chase it, make it a goal for our own lives and our civilization. It's not enough to act well in a place where justice is not the norm. We must strive to change an unjust situation into a just one. Tzedek, tzedek tirdof. Each of us must pursue true justice. It's easy to understand that for Jews, justice underlies everything good in society. Without justice, there is no peace. Without justice, there is no morality. Without justice, we simply can't trust our leaders or our government to act well. Sometimes we need to be forcibly reminded that on many issues, injustice still remains. We must continue to work seriously to rectify this in order to pursue justice. Be just, God commands. Never accept injustice as a permanent condition of life or society. Chase justice in your own life. Strive for justice in your organizations and institutions. Work for justice in your society. And then good will follow. It is a great and holy message in a society like ours, in which the pursuit of happiness sometimes seems to be the ultimate goal. But the better pursuit, indeed the most meaningful real pursuit for all of us, is justice. May our actions and our words help make our society more just this week and in the coming new year of 5782, now just 4 weeks away from tomorrow night, beginning September 6th. When we come back on Two Jewish, Rabbi David Ingber will explain how his remarkable congregation, Romamu, in New York, makes Judaism energizing and inspirational, and how it integrates Kabbalah into its practices. Find out when we return on Two Jewish in just a moment.
We continue with our Two Jewish update on news of Jews around the world with commentary.
Israel is the first country to give a third dose of the COVID vaccine shot to its population, a booster, in an effort to stem the spread of the Delta variant. Those people older than 60 years old are the first to get the booster from healthcare providers in Israel. President Isaac Herzog was among the first. Benjamin Netanyahu, the former prime minister, current leader of the opposition, got his shot on camera and encouraged others to vaccinate. Actually, Prime Minister Naftali Bennett is too young and doesn't yet qualify for the booster shot. "I'm proud we're the first country to vaccinate with a third dose," said Herzog. "The step we are taking is an important one for social solidarity in the state of Israel." The third booster dose aims to provide an extra layer of protection to those at higher risk for serious illness and death. Pfizer, which has manufactured the vast majority of Israel's vaccine doses, recommended a third dose. Earlier this year, Israel led the world in getting shots into arms, and in March, it became the first country to vaccinate over half its population. Case numbers plummeted, but they have spiked again in recent weeks because of the Delta variant. In other news, last week, President Joe Biden appointed Professor Deborah Lipstadt, a past guest of Two Jewish, as his nominee for special envoy to monitor and combat anti-Semitism. She's now an ambassador. Deborah Lipstadt is perhaps the leading scholar of anti-Semitism in America, author of Denying the Holocaust, History on Trial, My Day in Court with a Holocaust Denier, made into the movie Denial, starring Rachel Weisz, the books The Eichmann Trial and Anti-Semitism Here and Now. I guess we have to call her Ambassador Lipstadt now. And Rabbi Sharon Kleinbaum of Congregation Beit Simchat Torah was appointed to the United States Commission on International Religious Freedom by President Biden. He couldn't have chosen better people. Mazel tov to Ambassador Lipstadt and Commissioner Rabbi Kleinbaum on their appointments. The Jewish Federations of North America canceled the in-person portion of its signature annual event, the General Assembly, citing coronavirus, you guessed. The umbrella group for local federations planned to combine online and in-person events, but has told participants this week that it's canceling the latter for the expected 500 people or so. Last year, events were held online only, but Jewish federations, until the recent spike in coronavirus, hoped to reemerge in person. Instead, the events, October 4th to 5th, will be just online. "The health and safety of our participants is of the utmost importance to us. We believe canceling the in-person component of the GA is the best and most prudent decision at this time," they said. 2 years ago, Jewish federations pivoted from the come one, come all model that had characterized the General Assembly for decades, drawing about 3,000 people, to an invitation-only lab template, focusing more intensely on two or three issues. Well, they'll have to do that online. Other Jewish organizations are proceeding cautiously, too. AIPAC, the pro-Israel powerhouse, canceled its annual policy conference last March and also in March 2022. Israeli Olympians won a gold medal and two bronze at the Tokyo Olympic Games, among the best showings ever for the Jewish state. Israeli artistic gymnast Artem Dolgopiat made history, winning an Olympic gold medal in the finals of the men's floor exercise at the 2020 Tokyo Games, just held now in 2021. This was the second gold medal ever for an Israeli Olympic athlete after a windsurfing gold back in 2004 at the Athens Games. Dolgopiat will be heading home with 500,000 shekels in prize money, along with his new gold medal, equal to about $125,000. Artem doesn't even understand what an achievement this is. It's something inconceivable to Israeli sports, said Alex Shtilov, Dolgopiat's teammate on the Israeli gymnastics team. I believed he could be an Olympic champion. Artem and his coach deserve this. Prime Minister Naftali Bennett was quick to praise the gold medalist, interrupting a cabinet meeting to phone Dolgopiat. Thank you, Artem. You've made blue and white history, said Bennett, as Israeli ministers applauded. Bennett also said the win caused great pride and excitement for all Israelis. Foreign Minister Yair Lapid also praised Dolgopiat, referring to the win as history in Tokyo. And while Israel's judo team's individual competitors did not get medals, their team came together and won a new event, the mixed team judo, taking bronze. You know, for all the excitement over Dolgopiat's gold medal, there was a great deal of discussion in Israeli and Jewish media about the fact that the new champion cannot marry his girlfriend in Israel. Although his father is Jewish, his mother is not. That means he is not halachically Jewish, and since there is no civil marriage in Israel, no marriage is possible. Of course, Dolgopiat can do what most Israelis do in this situation, COVID permitting, fly to Cyprus, get married there, and register as married back home in Israel. Still, it's nice to see Israel achieve athletic acclaim in the Olympics. And that's the Two Jewish News of Jews around the world. We welcome back to Two Jewish our dynamic guest, Rabbi David Ingber, the founder of Romamu, with its tagline is Jewish Life Elevated, an extraordinary congregation and community in New York. Tell us how Romamu evolved from your original idea. We talked about your original idea as a place in which every interaction, every experience would leave people feeling elevated, if you will, or inspired, I guess, would be the word I would use. Tell us what changed as Romamu evolved.
Well, I mean, principally, it's still the same. It's a dynamic, vibrant Jewish center. It's like a very strong community, prayer life, and learning Torah, and acting to make the world a better place, or the three pillars of our community, like they are of every Jewish community. We manifested the dream of a fully integrated, holistic Jewish spiritual center through the purchase of a building a couple of years ago that we're now in the beginning of stages of a capital campaign to transform into the Abia Center, essentially. It has multiple floors, and we're hoping to add as well. So that's it took us a decade to be able to acquire a piece of property here in New York where that could become a reality. But the notion of a fully dimensional or multi-dimensional Jewish lived experience is happening also in Romamu Yeshiva. We started a yeshiva 3 years ago, which every summer has over 200 students, last couple of summers, especially online, that are engaging in Jewish life elevated through the study of Hasidic texts, through meditation and contemplation, and through embodied spiritual practice. And so that's happening in the most remarkable way. And it's a kind of neo-Hasidism renaissance here in the Roman community, a kind of living out of my teacher, Rabbi Zalman Shachter Shalomi's vision and his work in the yeshiva that we founded, which is the first fully egalitarian meditation yeshiva in the world. And so that's kind of where some of that is happening. And it happens also, in the daily operation of the synagogue and of the community. So it's all kind of proceeding. but it didn't take one day to build Rome.
No, Rome wasn't built in a day. Neither was Romamu. A different question, really. In normative Jewish practice, Kabbalah has always been kind of limited, esoteric. It isn't really integrated into the Siddur. It's always for, Hamevin, Yavin, the wise will understand. Hasidism varies in that, but American Judaism didn't make that mainstream. Tell us sort of your experience of bringing it to people who didn't have that experience growing up, who couldn't have.
Well, I would agree that to some extent, Kabbalah is esoteric to the extreme. And for most people, unless they've been to the Kabbalah Center, you know, which popularized Kabbalah and made it very palatable, Kabbalah is abstract and intellectually engaging, but isn't really the transformative force that Hasidism is. So Hasidism, for those who don't know, and your listeners, the Hasidic movement was itself rooted in Kabbalah and Jewish mysticism, but with a very important distinction, is that Hasidism was always asking, what is that idea or that principle pointing to in the real world? What's the nimshal? Right? That's the parable, but what does it mean in the real world? And so Hasidism from the beginning was really interested in application. How does that make me a better human being, a better Jew? How does that improve my life? How does that give me a deeper connection to the divine, or more meaning and more purpose? And so in that way, Hasidism as a revivalist movement was vastly successful in popularizing Kabbalah and making it nourishing for the average Jew, for your average Joe. And in that way, in many ways, North American Judaism threw out a lot of the baby when it threw out the bathwater. Like, Kabbalah was too esoteric, it was too abstract, it was too built on metaphysics, but the application that was Hasidism was something that was deeply potentially impactful for the North American Jewish consumer, Jewish seeker. And so I think that we've seen a renaissance of that, actually. Rambam is not unique in its importing of those ideas and those practices and those stories and those wisdom teachings and bringing them to, you know, your average person. Chabad has done it, of course, and they've done it incredibly successfully. In the non-Orthodox world, you see it in the Reform, in the Reconstruction, in the conservative world, all of them interested in application of Hasidic wisdom, Hasidic stories and songs and music. And so we've done that as well. And we're doing it, of course, without the baggage of the pre-modern, non-egalitarian worldview of the actual Hasidism. We're like postmodern Hasidim.
In creating a service, a liturgy, a prayer book, you draw on all kinds of things. I was looking at some of your Roma Musidor, the prayer book that you have. It's available online. Has many traditional elements, and then has some other stuff. How do you balance a desire for kind of a more traditional, coming from an Orthodox background, liturgy with the creativity that's sort of central to Jewish spirituality in a, I don't know, open environment?
Well, as you know as well, I mean, as a rabbi, you know that this is the quintessential tension between tradition and innovation, tradition and change, between what was and then a vision for what could be. And liturgy is a great place to land in terms of studying a powerful tool that is often not utilized in its fullest expression and as it could be. I mean, I'm just coming today from a shiva, from a home where we were praying, a morning home of shiva, and the people are not themselves Orthodox, but they had an Orthodox rabbi leading the services, and I just kept sitting there thinking, I know all of these words, I know all of these gestures, I know all of the choreography here, all the spiritual choreography, but it's not touching people. I can see that it isn't. And I thought,
sure,
it's such a shame. And of course, many of the other denominations have done, I mean, Reform and Reconstructionists have done an amazing job in using traditional liturgy and then also mixing English and music. And so that's wonderful. I think that we as a community in our Sidur, we try to do tradition plus. We try to have all of the words and all of the in Hebrew that are part of the liturgy. But in the English, we had a remarkable poet and scholar named Rabbi Jill Hammer translate all of those Hebrew prayers into a new translation that incorporated elements of Kabbalah and Hasidism and scholarship, and made the translation into the commentary so that you didn't have a literal translation then plus a commentary. If you were praying along with us in English, you could pray that English. That's the way that we intended it to be. You could pray that English. It would be theologically inviting. It would be heart opening, and it would engage the whole self. And one of the things that we do in prayer, as my teacher Rav Zalman used to say, the prayer book is not the meal, it's just the menu. Or you would often say it's also the ingredients of a recipe. You take a piece of the liturgy and you use it and you soak in it and you sit with it. You don't have to say everything that's on your plate, as it were. And so that's part of the ethos of how to use that tudor, is it's not there to be consumed, but to be, to inspire and to engage and to point in a direction of the heart.
I studied a little bit with Reb Zalman, and he could really shake you up in some interesting and I think powerful ways. He could also go too far at times, couldn't he?
Yeah, Reb Zalman was he called himself a psychonaut, like an astronaut.
Right.
He was a psychonaut. He liked to go where no one had gone before, and I think that he was extremely innovative, and he knew what he used to say, the system files. Like, he understood the roots of all of the practices and where they came from. And so it gave him great strength, and with great strength came also the potential for great flexibility. He could bend in many different directions. And sometimes he tried to take people with him when he tried to bend, and you could get hurt if you weren't equally stable or equally strong in certain ways. And I also think that he also wanted to shock people into looking at Judaism in a different way. And I think that he, at that time, when he was becoming who he became, it wasn't easy. There were countervailing forces. You know, when he stood at JTS, there's a story about him standing at JTS, at the Jewish Theological Seminary, to pray, and he had been asked to lead the prayers, and he was standing in full Hasidic garb. He was dressed out in his bekesha and his shrimal, and he was praying there in the Jewish Theological Seminary, and he came to Adon Olam, the prayer called Master, Lord of the Universe, Master of the Universe.
The concluding.
And he began to sing. He began to sing in this melody. Adon Olam Asher Malach V'terem Kol Yitzir Nivra Da 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 da. It was around the winter time, see? And he was trying to take, you know, Silent Night.
Yep.
And plug it in, and it was immediately met with such swift backlash.
I'm sure.
Now it's ubiquitous for people to use all kinds of songs.
All kinds of melodies for Adon Olam. Yeah, of course.
So he did go. You know, it's a good question, and that's the burden of being a pioneer. Sometimes you do go too far.
Do you feel like you're a pioneer?
Yeah, I think I... I certainly think that I'm a pioneer in certain ways. I certainly think that in many ways I want to consolidate what Reb Zalman saw and bring it to as many people as possible. I see my role sometimes as, you know, as the Isaac figure, you know, the second generation. But in many ways I also have my own... I feel very creative in my own ways and pioneering in my own ways. And, you know, Romamu was the first community in the country to hire a non-Jewish minister as part of our clergy team. She was married to a Jewish man, and it made sense for me. She was very Jewishly involved, and she was almost like a rabbi. I said, we need to have more of this kind of welcoming approach. And she was wonderful. And that was, I think, a unique instance. And other things. Yeah, I think I feel very much called to be a pioneer in my own way.
So I want to know what's on the top floor of the new building. If it's going through stages, as you climb through the Hasidic organization of the evolution of the soul, what's at the top floor?
So it's such a great question. Nobody has ever asked me that question. So what a wonderful question. So the truth is that there should be nothing there, right? It's just pure
Ayin,
pure nothingness.
Yeah.
Ayin. But I wanted, you know what I wanted to put on the top floor? The first floor was going to be a floor with gyrotonic machines and Pilates machines and yoga studio and Tai Chi, all mind-body.
All the physical stuff, sure.
Mm-hmm. The second floor was going to be the shul, because it's the service of the heart, and the heart is the second dimension, yetzira, emotions. So that was the second level. The third level was going to be a full-on study center of where you would study Hasidic texts, like a Beit Midrash, a study hall.
Mm-hmm.
And the top level of Atzilut was going to be a meditation or contemplative center where you study Jewish contemplative practices and you Sufi and Hindu and kind of a world center for the revival of meditation and contemplative practice. And then I thought, what could be above that? So you're right. It could be nothing. Or my original idea was it was a restaurant.
That's so Jewish.
I think
it's too Jewish, David.
In the hungry, it's too Jewish. And I think that's exactly what it is. No matter what you do, Jews, like Jackie Mason said, they just want to eat.
You gotta eat. Yep, absolutely.
So I was going to have an organic restaurant on the top floor called Havaya, which means being.
Yep.
But we'll see. Maybe too Jewish.
I want to thank Rabbi David Ingber for a great visit here on Too Jewish. Where can people go to find out more about Romamu and to find out more about you?
Oh, I'd love to have visitors. Romamu.org, R-O-M-E-M-U.org is the place to go to for all things Romamu, or on Facebook as well. We're there. So we invite you to join us, to Zoom in with us, take classes. I teach classes all week on Hasidism. More than welcome to join us. We'd love to have you.
Thank you so much. Continued success. We'll have to get you back.
Okay. I look forward to it. Thank you for talking with me today.
When we come back on Too Jewish, we'll hear about next week's guest, get a final musical play out.
We are the soul of Tucson. We are your neighbors and friends. Our commitment to provide the very best relies on the finest products and services you, our community, has to offer. Together, we make Tucson thrive. When we win, you win. Casino del Sol, the soul of Tucson.
Enterprise of the Pasquayaki Tribe.
Congregation Beit Simcha, the House of Joy, a newish Jewish synagogue in the northwest of Tucson in the Catalina foothills, celebrates a great array of services, classes, and events this summer and fall. Established by passionate, caring congregants and me, Rabbi Sam Kohan, Beit Simcha has created a vibrant, vital community that strives every day to serve God with joy. A new progressive congregation in northwest Tucson in the foothills, Beit Simcha is open to everyone throughout the metropolitan area, providing weekly Shabbat services, youth and adult education academy courses, social justice opportunities, outreach, and cultural Jewish programming, and High Holy Day services for 5782 coming up beginning of September. Beit Simcha's synagogue is located at 2270 West Ina Road on the north side of Ina, just west of La Cholla, in our own building near the entrance to the Foothills Mall property. All of our Adult Education Academy classes are live and on Zoom. You can access those by emailing us, rabbi@beitsimchatucson.org, or going to our website, BeitSimchaTucson.org. Our wonderful religious school and Torah Tikes programs are available in blended formats as well, some students live, some on Zoom. For more information about Beit Simcha, to attend services, our great religious school and Torah Tikes programs, bar and bat mitzvah, confirmation, high school programs, and rich array of adult education academy courses taught in person and on Zoom, and of course all of our services in person and on Facebook, go to BeitSimchaTucson.org, BeitSimchaTucson.org, or call 520-276-5675. That's 276-5675, BeitSimchaTucson.org. Join me, Rabbi Sam Kohan, in the newest, fastest-growing, and most exciting Jewish community in southern Arizona in its great beginning years. Thanks for being here with us this morning on Too Jewish with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan. Join us next week. Our guest will be Carolyn Cusin Pritchard, author of the new children's book, Giddy and Kvetch, which teaches Yiddish to kids in a very fun way. Our playout this morning comes for the new month of Elul, final one in this difficult coronavirus-plagued 5781 year. Elul begins Monday. It's the start of our pre-High Holy Day musical preview on Too Jewish, B'Sefer Chaim. Write us in the Book of Life. And don't forget, you can join us at Congregation Beit Simcha in person or on Facebook every Friday night. Services are at 6:30 p.m. and there's an Oneg Shabbat with delicious food. Starts at 6:30. Saturday morning, Torah studies at 9 a.m. on Zoom or in person. And 10 a.m. services and Torah reading in person or on Facebook Live. My friends, have a Shavua Tov and a good month, a good week, and a week, we pray, of health and of peace.
Sefer Chaim bracha v'shalom u'farnasa tova. zacher venikatev lefanecha anachnu vekol hamcha beit Yisrael lechaim lechaim tovim uleshalom. Olamcha Beit Yisrael Lechaim Lechaim Tovim Uleshalom.
Sponsored by two Jewish radio programs, Tucson, Arizona.